sort of contemporary halacha. The last year that we gave, we reviewed most, but not all, of Rav Risa's shir on Seder HaGet. What I'd like to do, with your permission, and I'm not really asking you because I'm doing it, is that we're going to skip the rest of Rav Risa's shir on Seder HaGet. Maybe we'll get back to that a different time. I want to focus tonight on the medical halacha shiurim and move into the, what's the section called, contemporary questions. So let's go. The first medical halacha shiur that we had was given by Rabbi Brander about reproductive technology. This is actually a very cutting-edge area of medicine, and it's also an area where there is a lot that's uncertain in halacha. So let's talk about some of the issues that came up. Now, Rabbi Brander just mentioned as a bit of introduction that the challenge of infertility is a real challenge. One out of every six couples actually will end up having difficulty having children, and the definition of infertility for our purposes is a couple who, after a year of trying, cannot conceive. Just as an aside, Rabbi Willig always points out that, you know, the common shayla that couples have today, which we really should discuss in contemporary halacha at some point, is the question of birth control. And it's very common that couples at the beginning of marriage want to go into birth control. Rabbi Willig points out that as many shaylas as he has of couples who want to go into birth control, you know, there's also the other side of the shayla, which is a couple goes onto birth control and stays on birth control for a few years, and they find out that they're really having difficulty having children, and everything was postponed, and the woman is much older, and it's just much harder to conceive. So it's really something to take into consideration. It is a serious issue. Now, Rabbi Brander basically gave a list of a whole slew of procedures. We're not going to go through the whole list. Dilation and curettage, and HSG, and we're not going to go through that now. If you're interested, of course, and it's important to know which of these tests potentially cause nidus, which of these don't cause nidus. So honestly, we listen to Rabbi Brander's here. And in the second volume of Rabbi Forrest's Art Scroll book on Hilchos Nida, he really has a long discussion about these various tests. He has an entire section on gynecological procedures where he goes through them. What's interesting is that Rabbi Forrest had that in volume 1, and then he redid it in volume 2 also. He added many more tests. He changed some of the things. There's a lot of interesting material there. Now, in order to understand the issue of reproductive technology and the question of nidus that comes up from many of these gynecological procedures, we have to really understand just the halacha about where nidus causes. The Gemara tells us that achatargish bivsara, then isha is not really a nida min ha-toira until there's some sort of hargasha, and the hargasha has to be that the dam leaves the makar and goes into the bayis hachitzon. Now, what exactly does that mean? So there is a big machlokas harishonim about the status of the cervix. The uterus is where nidus happens. There's an endometrial lining on the inside of the uterus, and that lining sloughs off, as Rabbi Brander is fond to say. He loves that word for some reason. It sloughs off once a month when the egg is not fertilized. And the question is, if dam leaves the uterus and goes into the cervix, is that also considered tuma min hatayra or not? That's a big machlokes harishonim. Another way to look at that same question is when we speak about the psichas hamakar, which is another important halacha in Hilchos Nida, that we assume that im psichas pi hamakar below dam, that there's automatically dam whenever there's psichas hamakar. The question is, what is psichas hamakar? Is psichas hamakar what's called the internal as, which is the boundary between the uterus and the cervix, or is it the external as, which is the as, O-S, which is the boundary between the cervix and the vagina? That is basically the question that many poskim address, and that's a very, very serious question, because very often, a procedure will penetrate the external as, but not the internal as. So that itself is not so borrowed. That's considered piha makar. That's the way Rabbi Brander describes it. Now, if you look in the Arts Grove book, and in which also it's a very, very fine thing, he points out that yes, this is true according to some of the Acharonim, but many Acharonim split. Many Acharonim say that no, it could be that klapa the dinim of when dam comes out to make you a nida, so going from the uterus into the cervix is enough to become a nida. But it could be that the external as would still be the point of psichas pihamakar. Why that's true in love, this is really a very interesting thing, but that's not for now. Okay? Now, next issue. The Gemara tells us that there's a concept of an Isha who is Roadam Achmas Tashmish. That every time that she has Tashmish Amit with her husband, she sees Dam, and such an Isha is forbidden to her husband. There's a Chiyuv that they have to separate, they can't remain married. Basically, most often this comes up when there is some condition that the endometrial lining penetrates, it sticks up, it protrudes above the uterus, it goes actually even past the cervix into the vagina, and the makom shashamash dash will actually make the dam nidus come out. It's a very rare condition. Today, Rav Shechter mentioned when we learned nida nikola years ago that today it's fully rectifiable, like any woman who has this condition will probably know about it beforehand and doctors will take care of it, so obviously it won't really come up. But in the Gemara, when we speak about Ro Adam Ach Mastashmish, the Gemara says that if the Isha has a Maka, right, Im Yesha Maka but Osa Makom, even if she has a wound, so then Tola B'Makasa, then she is Tola on that Maka. And in Yerideus and Kuf Pei Zayin Se'if Hei, so we have this case of Tola B'Makasa, and there's a whole long complicated Ramah about what this means exactly. Are we talking about an Isha She'yesh Lavesis or an Isha She'ein Lavesis? Basically, the maskana of the Ramah seems to be that if it's an Isha She'yesh Lavesis, so then we are Tola B'maka, even if we do not know that this is a bleeding wound. However, if it's an Isha She'ein Lavesis, we're only Tola B'maka if we know that it's a bleeding wound. That's the maskana of the Ramah in Simin Kuf Pei Zayin Se'if Hei. There is a further discussion in the Taz that it could be that if it is not even a bona fide maka, you don't know for sure that there's a wound, but there's just ka'ev, so ka'ev itself might be considered a maka, that might be enough of a right there's a maka, that's also a very lumdish point in the Taz. Now, what does this have to do with us? L'chor, this is a Ro'adam Achmas Tashmish that we're told on the maka. What does this have to do with anything? It has nothing to do with our gynecological procedures. Right? We're talking about that if there's some maka that's caused, let's say the doctor goes in with a curette and he does like an endometrial biopsy, for example, which is that he cuts off a bit of the endometrial lining. So you know for sure there's a maka that's caused on the lining. So how would that help for our case? How would that help? Because we're talking about Shulchan Aruch that you're told on the Maka, so the Isha doesn't have to get divorced from her husband. Who says it helps that she's not a Nida at all? Unclear. But the Shah happens to have one line which really turned all of gynecological halacha upside down. The Shah said that the din is true even klape ordinary Nidas. Right? The Shah said that in Isha, once we have a Maka, so she won't be a nida b'chlal. She won't be tamei at all. Now, what does this mean? Im yesh la maka toila b'makasa. What type of maka are we talking about? Are we talking about a maka that is like an extraneous growth on that lining, and that extraneous growth is bleeding? Or are we talking about the type of maka that's a cut in the endometrial lining itself, and the ordinary classic dam nidus is coming out, but it's not coming out because it's her period, it's coming out because there's a cut there? This is a very big question. Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach is quoted in the Nishmas Avram that he's making on the Shaila. His lashon is, if the maka is motzi adam, mei hagidim shemispakim b'shas haveses, the maka gives dam off from those gidin, those veins that are mispakin b'shasa vesas, those veins that bleed during her period, right? It is dam nida, but she's going to be tahora, that's tola b'makasa, because it's only considered dam nida, it's only tameya if it's dam that's yotzi me'elav kedarko ba'ofen tivi. This is what Rabbi Brander's entire shiur and his article that he wrote in the RJJ journal is based on this Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, that the dam that comes out, right, from a wound, you have a cut on the endometrial lining, but it's regular needles dam that comes out, it still is going to be tahora. Now, Art Scroll, Rabbi Forrest, takes a more machmir position. He says, listen, it's really hard to tell. You have to be machmir in most of these shilas, because how do you know that the dam is only coming out because of the cut? Maybe once there's a cut, that kind of, I don't know, maybe dam are like ants, you know, that ants in an ant colony, once one of them starts going, they all follow, or that type of thing. So they're just like, all the dam is going to keep on going, and it's hard to tell. So Art Scroll is machmir on many more cases than Rabbi Forrest is machmir on, because he says, you don't know for sure that the dam is coming out. What? Rabbi Forrest is more machmir than Rabbi Brander. Art Scroll is more machmir than Rabbi Shlomo Zalman. Right.
That's what he meant.
How did I say it?
Art Scroll is more machmir than Rabbi Forrest.
Oh, that was a mistake. Fine. So now, he's
still assuming, though, that the question would come up more because you don't have a set period. Because otherwise
that's beferish in Shulchan Aruch, that question, can you be tola b'maka b'shas b'ses mamish? Let's say you know for sure a period is coming in a day. Can you be tola in the maka at that time? For those types of questions, you have to learn kuf pei zayin sif hei b'iyon. Like exactly when we're tola. But in theory, let's say it's an isha sheyeshla vesas and shelo b'shas vesta, and it's a bleeding wound, right? It's the classic case that we can be tola, and we have the shafa, you can be tola even for tumas nida. But right, Rabbi Forrest quotes that, listen, we don't really know for sure that it's dam maka. It's hard to determine, and for all purposes, these gynecological procedures may render the woman a nida, and you have to ask him over
hora. Oh, so it's not during the
We're not talking about during the vessels. We're talking about, right, if it's during the vessels, it's a further shiloh that you have to learn that sif very carefully for. Now, Rav Schachter happens to have a different shita. I remember a few years ago, the Rabbi Brander ran this class for fellows in the Kol HaOyon, where we were learning some of these halachos with Machon Pua, and we went and we spoke to Rav Schachter about some things that we heard, and Rav Schachter said that he felt like this. He felt that the din da'irais of nida that we mentioned earlier is only if it's dam sheyesh bahargasha. You feel the dam, bivsara, you feel it when it comes out. However, dam without hargasha, right, is going to be tamei as a kesem. Right? In other words, that if you know the dam is coming from the makar, but you don't feel it coming out, that's called a kesem. Zakter Shechter, so if that's the case, so all the dam that comes up in these gynecological procedures, the chora, right, if you do an endometrial biopsy, so you're cutting the lining, and the regular dam nidus now comes out, yeah, okay, so it's not tameya because it's dam maka, and I'm tola min hatorah on that. But who says it's not going to be a kesem? So she should still be tameya midrabana. Obviously, the difference between ksamim in terms of levishas, tzivonim, for example. Tzivonim is the big kula, right? The gimel chamorei olam that the Dag Omer Vava calls, right? That's the famous mistake in the Dag Omer Vava, right? There are three different shitas harishayim who assume that any dam that is on tzivonim is not going to be tame at all, if it's a kesem, right? So that would be a kula, right? Perhaps you could be mako in that type of case, that we should tell the woman she have to wear colored garments rather than white garments. But it's just good to know that Rav Schachter has an interesting shita that really is kedai to think about when you go through the sugyas. The next issue that Rabbi Brander discusses is the shaila of iyashel psichas hakever below dam. Now, what this basically means is that once the makar opens, once there's dilation So then we know that there is going to be dam, that she's going to be tmeya nida. Now, the case in the Gemara and in Shulchan Aruch is about leida, is about a woman who in childbirth, in leida, so there's psicha sakever, and that's psicha sakever mibifnim, that's a Lashon HaPoskim, that her internal body makes it open up. What about psicha sakever mibachot? What about psicha sakever mibachot? So the Noda Yehuda is Mahmir. He says that psicha sakever mibachot is a problem. The Avni Nezer quotes on the Chochmas Adam, and others point out it's not a 1,000,000% clear that the Chochmas Adam says the sever, but the Avni Nezer quotes on the Chochmas Adam says that there's no such thing as psicha sakever mibachot, and then psicha sakever is only mibifnim. This is a very important Avnei Nezer. Avnei Nezer has the following shaila. Maybe we should be make on all these cases of psicha sakever because it's a spek sveika. The sheet of the Rambam is that we pass an efshel of psicha sakever below dam. The Rambam says it's possible that there's psicha sakever without dam. And maybe we hold like a chachmas adam. There's no such thing as psicha sakever mibachutz. So maybe we should be make on whenever a doctor puts an instrument in, maybe we should be make on that she doesn't become a need. Now this is talking about a case that there is no dam. Right? Iyashab Sikhs Kabodam means that there's no dam, but we assume there's dam and she becomes a nida if a wide instrument. We'll talk in a second about how wide it has to be. If a wide instrument goes in, So, Lachora, the Avni Nezer has a shayla, we should rely on a Svek Sveika, and he works very hard to answer this kasha. Now, Lamaisa, we are Machmir on Psicha Sakhever Mibachotz. We're Machmir, we pass on like the Noda Yehuda. How big does it have to be for psicha sakever? Rav Moshe Feinstein says it has to be 3/4 of an inch. 3/4 of an inch is roughly 19.05 millimeters, according to the quick thing I just did on my computer. To what's that, the converter? Right? Rav Fivel Cohen in the Badei HaShulchan says 15 millimeters. Apparently there are a decent number of instruments between these two shiurim. But Bederach Klal in America, the poskim are makel like Rav Moshe, 19 millimeters, 3/4 of an inch is considered psicha sakever. So a woman, when she goes for an exam, she really has to ask the doctor first of all, how far did you put an instrument in? Second of all, how big was that instrument? Right? Was there any dam? Was there not dam? All these questions have to be asked by the woman.
Why does it matter how deep?
Because in order to be psichas hakever, it has to go to that place that's considered, where that place is what we spoke about before. The internal us or the external us, it's not 100% clear. Not clear. Now,
does it matter if the doctor is Jewish or not?
So does it matter if the doctor is Jewish? So, bederech klal, a Jewish doctor has nemonis. A non-Jewish doctor, you have to question his nemonis. Umen lomara umnasa is a big question. In Kuf Yud Tes, whether we assume that that will help on the Doraisa. Rabbi Brander mentioned in his shir that Machon Pua's shita, Machon Pua is this institute in Eretz Yisrael that deals with infertility. Their shita is that they trust even non-Jewish doctors. Fine.
If you have a procedure which you're there for, and you ask the doctor, something simple like how big the instrument is, you can see it before you used to.
You could see it. So that's most of it. In certain cases, there are other things, but very often you're not going to really see it. Some of these procedures are done under general anesthesia.
If you're conscious for it.
What?
So that's if you're awake, you're conscious for it.
Right, if you're obviously those procedures that you're awake for do not go as deep as the procedures that they put you under. Fine. Now, basically, after a couple has difficulty conceiving, so they go for the first set of infertility treatments. The halacha always recommends that we try to test the woman before testing the man. Right? Now, infertility can be male factor or female factor, or sometimes it's what's called a combined factor. But generally, we test the woman before we test the men, and that's because of the severity of the Issur for Tzaser Lebatola, which in Simen Chaf Gimel Neven HaEzer, the Beis Yosef and the Bedek HaBayis quote from the Zohar that this is the most serious Aveira in the Torah. So, Lamaisa, Hamais of the Tshuvos of the Tzitz Eliezer gives us a sequum of what is the most preferable way to check, to test a man's sperm. The most preferable way is what's called PCT, which is the postcoital test, which is that after a couple is together, so then you remove the zera from the Gufa Isha. Now that test has the most problems because you don't get a good sample. There is another way, right, one row beneath that, which is Dashmi Bifnim Vizarmi Bachutz. One row beneath that is to wear a condom. Some poskim recommend perforating the condom. It has to be a special type of condom, or else the condoms contain spermicide, which defeats the whole purpose. Then there is, beneath that is Tzlochis Begufa Isha, Tzlochis Berechama Isha, that it's like equivalent to a female condom. And then beneath that, the Tzitz Eliezer is even makel on being Motzi Zera B'Yadayim. It's preferable if you do it Al-Yaday someone else rather than Al-Yaday yourself. And it's preferable if you use some instruments rather than hands. But the point is, the basic cheshbon over here is that this is not considered Hotzar Zera V'Atala. Because the reason why you are being Motzi the Zera is in order to potentially have a child. So Adarabba, it's not considered Hotzar Zera L'Vatala. And this is the accepted approach of Poskim, because we have basically what we try to do after a couple has difficulty is we do IUI or IVF. IUI is intrauterine insemination, which is that you take the zera of the husband and you, instead of having the zera, forcing the zera to travel the entire way through her body and up through the fallopian tubes, you can actually put it right into the uterus, right? And what we do for IUI is that we take the zera out from the man, however we get it, and then we do a process called washing the zera, which is that we take the sperm and we look at it to see which are the healthiest sperm, and we the sperm that has the best shape and the sperm that move the best, and then we take the best sperm and we inject it. Rav Shlomo Zalman has a discussion, isn't there, Nisif Hotzer Zel Vatola, on the sperm that gets wasted in the sperm washing process. A lot of the sperm gets wasted. So he says, no, it's all necessary to get those few good sperm. Right? A man can produce millions and millions of sperm, and all you need is one. Right? So to get that one good sperm that can impregnate his wife, so that's not considered Levatola. That's what Rav Shlomo Zalman is quoted as saying in the Nishmas Avram. Now, after IUI, generally there's a procedure that's done which is called IVF, which is in vitro fertilization. Now, in vitro fertilization is a whole slew of issues. Basically, these are test tube babies, to use the colloquial term, which is that you take the egg out of the isha and you take the sperm from the man and you put them together in a test tube, and that's how she becomes pregnant. When it grows to a size of 8 cells, which is called the blastocyst stage of development, so then you put it into the woman, right, and the pregnancy begins. Generally, they put in more than one, and then you have other shilas and halacha of fetal reduction, which is a woman is pregnant with, let's say, put 4 or 5 in, right, the octomom, right? So this type of thing happens because they put in many different fetuses. And that's a very serious shaila about fetal reduction, because if you don't take some of them out, they will all die, potentially. And that gets involved in the Mishnah in Trumas and everyone's favorite sugya that comes up from there. So that's the IVF issue. Now, what Rabbi Brandon discussed in terms of IVF is a few shailas. First of all, getting the egg out of the woman is not a simple procedure. It's not a simple procedure. You have to stimulate the follicles, and the eggs have to be extracted, which is an Isser of Dosh. It's an Isser Dereis on Shabbos to do that. So you really can't do it on Shabbos. In Eretz Yisrael, which is one of the leaders in fertility treatment, so in Eretz Yisrael, they don't do it on Shabbos, Pashat. But if you're in America, you really have to be very careful, because you have to start taking the medicine a few days in advance. But you have to schedule these things properly. That's one issue. The other issue that comes up is the New York Times had an article a few years ago about an egg mix-up, which basically that they took gametes of one person and they put them into a different person without telling them. Right? If you tell them, that's called surrogate motherhood. If you don't tell them, so then you that's a mix-up. So they have hashgacha today in the laboratories, and Rabbi Brander mentioned, just like Derech Agav, that yeah, we'd be mekel even without hashgacha, but you should have hashgacha. That's a very interesting point. When we went down to that lab, we met the mashgiach, and he has it's a very serious business to be a mashgiach on this stuff. He has like five different like keys and locks on each one of the. There's a big refrigerator basically, and there's a little boxes inside, and the mashgiach is the one who has the keys to each thing. The doctors don't have the keys themselves because the concern is very serious. Why is the concern serious? Because the labs want to increase their results. They have a very good incentive to take the best gametes they have and put them in, right? Because that will give them a higher chance. If you are a person who has gametes that might not work, so that's the issue there.
And they can mix things up even unintentionally as well.
Right, unintentional mix-up is also an issue, correct? So we really need a very serious hashgacha. Now, one of the issues that comes up over here is in the case of IUI or IVF, right? Let's say a married woman, her husband doesn't have sperm. He can't impregnate her. He's really infertile. So can she get IUI or IVF from a donor? This is a married woman, is the child going to be a mamzer? And of course, this famously is the machlekes between the Rav Moshe Feinstein and the Satmar Rav. This is why Rav Moshe's house is almost firebombed, right? As Rabbi Brander told the story a bit, or I think he alluded to the story. The main Maramakom over here is in Siman Kuf Tzadi Hei, the Hagos Hasmak is quoted, that an Isha should not lie down on sheets of another man. The concern is, Shema Yisa Ochi Vesachosa. But there's no concern that an Isha would lie on the sheets of her husband, even when she's a Nida. That's what it says. Question is, why not? So apparently the issue is, and most poskim understand, that we're only worried about Shema Yisa Ochi Vesachoso, right? We're not worried about anything else. That's a standard approach. That's the way it's quoted by the Bach. That's what the Taz quotes in Kuf Tzadi Hei. That's a standard Mahalach. What that basically means is that a woman who is going to become pregnant from some zera that's on the sheets, right? She's a married woman and it's zera of someone else. That baby is not going to be a mamzer, but the father of that baby is the guy who zerat is. Shema Yisa Oche Vesachosa. In order to have mamzeris, you need bias iser. That's the basic yisod. However, the Poskim, Moshe, and the Sibsalias are both point out the Shilte HaGiborim in Meseches Shavuos says a little bit different. The Shilte HaGiborim says, how come we're only worried that a woman should not lie on the sheets of another man? How come we're not worried that a Nida should not lie on the sheets of her husband? So you say, well, Bas HaNida is only going to be a Pugam, but Bas, somebody else, is going to be a Mamzer. So that shita really holds that there's an Isser of Mamzerus even without Bias Isser. Rav Shechter in his Sefer, I think in the Eretz HaTzvi, points out that this is the etzem two different girsa'os that Arashba has in the Gemara Yevamos and Daf Mem Daled. How you read a Gemara Yevamos, whether Mamzerus is a function of Bias Isser or not, is two girsa'os in the Rashba. That is a very, very important issue. Now, Reb Moshe paskins like the standard Mahalach, not like the Shilte HaGiborim, and therefore he says, if the only concern is Shema Yisa Ochi Vesachoso, so a pregnant woman who wants to have IUI or IVF from some man who's not her husband, she should use a Goyish donor. Because then there's no concern of Shema Yisa Ochi Vesachoso. Fine. There's a discussion that Rabbi Brander mentioned, the Machlokas in the Noda B'Yehuda, and the and the Keren Oren Yevamos, in terms of, let's say, the Zera, let's say the father is dead already by the time the baby, by the time the woman becomes impregnated. Now, this could happen in a few different ways. It could happen today, where we freeze the sperm, and then you could impregnate with that sperm thousands of years later. Or it could have happened in the time of the Gemara, that takes 3 days, let's say, for Klitas HaZera. Right, that's the sugya that we know about from Shavuos. Right, it takes 3 days for Klitas HaZera. So it could be that the husband dies right after they have Tashmish HaMita, and Klitas HaZera happens after he's dead. So is that child considered his child? So l'chol davar, the child is considered his child. There's a chiddush in Noda Yehuda that le'inyan yibum, it's not considered his child. And even that chiddush of the Noda Yehuda, the Keren Ora disagrees with. But certainly for purposes of nachala, and for purposes of how you call up as an aliyah, or whatever, the father is the father, even though the father is dead. U'b'mos aviha ve'ima l'kacham v'r'chai v'olavas. Right, so the Gemara Megillah says that the father died right after they were together, before she became pregnant, still considered the father, but most of the help. Just say that. Now, there are a few, yeah, quickly.
Yeah. Just we'll also have ramifications for the question of when you do the procedure, when you schedule the procedure, because if you are doing IUI, let's say, then it could be at any specific time of the month until...
Oh, okay. I mean, that's another shaila in terms of, like, the bas hani, whether you should go to the mikveh before the IUI if she is technically... she hasn't gone to the mikveh yet. Certain women who have, like, the halachic infertility that they ovulate before they could go to the mikveh. So, bederach klal, there are other ways of solving this issue, but sometimes you could do it with IUI... Right, and then the question is, should you go to the mikveh? But anyway, you should probably go to the mikveh to avoid bas hanidam, a man of shach.
Unless we don't believe.
What? No, we believe there's a din of bas hanidam. When the Dharma Daf Chaf is worried about bas hanidam,
it's b'nei teshas hamidah. Right? Whether bas hanidam or moms are both at a question here.
No, I mean, Well, it could be that there's no mamzeros. Because Mamzeris is tolling B.S.S. I don't think anyone would say that Bas Hanid is tolling B.S.S. Maybe.
So therefore, if you want to avoid the question, then you might...
Okay, yeah, enough anami, right. Now, what about surrogate motherhood in Halacha? This is actually a shayla. I guess I could say it, even though it's going up online. I have a cousin who's a not-religious young woman who was born without ovaries. Hence, she does not produce any eggs. She has a uterus, she does not have ovaries. So, she and her husband wanted to have a child. So, they got a Polish woman to donate an egg. And now, she had twins a few months ago. So, this is a double shayla. This is a double shayla over here. Is the child Jewish? First shayla. Right? The egg is from a Polish woman. The birth mother is a Jewish woman. Is the child going to be Jewish or not? So, this is a very serious shayla. Rav Shechter and Rav Yoshev both say that we don't know. We're mesopic. Some poskim have these complicated rayas, Matar Yonos and Benazia, about how Rachel and Leah switch the babies, right? And who's considered the mother? Maybe it's only the birth mother. We don't know. It's very hard to bring rayas on this stuff. We really don't know. So it's a suffix. So what do you recommend in the case of a suffix? Well, you recommend geiris. Right? You recommend geiris. The problem is, my cousin is not religious. She lives in this town. She's a chiloni. Ordinary Israeli chiloni. So the problem is, can you be the guy or the child? Okay, guys. Right? This gets all the shaylas together. Have fun. Right? Fine. Next. What they have today is they do an IVF with what's called PGD. Now, PGD is the cutting-edge technology. Rabbi Brander wrote an article about this in Tradition. PGD is pre-implantation genetic diagnosis. Basically, after IVF, when you are at that blastocyst stage where you have 8 cells, so you take one of those cells out and you do a test on it, a chromosomal test, just to make sure everything is okay. Now, is this permitted? Is it permitted to do this test? Now, why would you want to do this test? Well, I could do this test for many reasons. I could do this test because I'm bedafka on a boy, not a girl. Yeah, but if I'm bedafka on a boy, not a girl, I could figure that out easier in the sperm washing process. I could already make sure I get a boy, not a girl. Right? That's easy. Right? Easy. I can have no any idea how I do this, but apparently that's easier. But you could do this if you're worried about some chromosomal diseases and you want to make sure the child won't chas v'shalom have a disease. So you can make sure we're not going to implant the blastocyst unless, right, it's clean, unless it doesn't have a disease. But you could also do it for other reasons. You could also do it because you want someone who's going to be 6'3", blonde hair, and play lacrosse well. Well, if that's what you want a lacrosse player. So the poskim have a big discussion. Rav Burstein sent the shayla to Rav Nevinzel, to Rav Amar, to all the poskim. Basically, most poskim say, "B'hadik havshid rachman olam alach." You know, if you're doing it for a reason to avoid a disease, gevaldik. But if you're doing it because you want a child who has alomilus and midas, so maybe that is not a good thing to do. You should not do it. There's another discussion that Rabbi Brander mentioned in terms of whether you can be machal Shabbos for these fertilized eggs that have not yet been implanted. So most poskim have a cute vart. They say shofech dam ha'adam ba'adam, right? That the iser of it's only considered human alive machal Shabbos only once it's adam ba'adam, but beforehand when it's in the test tube, it's nothing. Okay, so this takes us to the end of Rabbi Brander's. There's actually 2 shiurim of Rabbi Brander that we just did because he did most of his second shiur on what are we talking about? Reproductive technology. Good. Any further questions, or should we move on to the next one?
Even if it was inside the mother, presumably the blastocyst was well within the first
40 days. Right. So we're machal Shabbos. The Ramban says we are machal Shabbos teich mem yom. Even though Toch Mem Yom is not Matamei, but we're Mechal Shabbos because of Chalil of Shabbos Achas, Kedesh Shishmer Shabbos Es Harbe. That's the whole shir that we can give in its own right. That's why there's Machlokas Rabbi Abfel mentioned in his shir, between the Minchas Yitzchak and the other poskim about whether Mechal Shabbos and Tinuk Shenishba, right? It's the same type of thing. It won't be Yishmer Shabbos Es Harbe, but it's a Chai, right? Or you could have a situation that it's not a Chai, but it would be Yishmer Shabbos Es Harbe. You could do it both ways. I should be telling the limud, and that's a very interesting shir to give, but not for now.
Yeah,
now
that's the shir that Rabbi Appel didn't give.
The shir that he didn't give. Well, he gave part of that. Okay, let's go. Rabbi Dr. Eddie Reichman spoke about organ donations. Now, organ donations come in 2 forms. There is living donors, and then there are cadaveric donors. Living organ donation is basically blood and kidneys. There's also liver, but liver, we'll talk about why that's different than blood and kidneys. Bone marrow is also an example of a living organ that's donated. Skin is a living organ that's donated. There are donations of living organs. Over here, by donations of living organs, the sugya that's discussed is Gemara in Sanhedrin about Losawa Adam Re'echa, that you're not allowed to stand idly by when someone is in mortal danger. The shaila is, am I allowed to put myself into a suffix sakana to save somebody from a vade sakana? The Beis Yosef famously quotes from the Hagos Maimoni in the Defus Kushta in the Constantinople Hagos Maimoni, where he said that you are mechuyev to enter a suffix sakana to save somebody from a vade sakana. However, the later post can point out that the Beis Yosef did not quote this in Shulchan Aruch. The question is why this is so. The Sma assumes that's because the Beis Yosef changed his mind. Other poskim say the Beis Yosef, yes, he changed his mind, but he had real good reasons he changed his mind. There's some list of 4 or 5, maybe 6 Gemaras in Talmud Bavli that perhaps disagree with this Hagos Maimoni, which is based on the Talmud Yerushalmi in Meseches Trumas. Good. So we paskin, most poskim assume that there's no chiyuv to enter a suffix sakana in order to save your friend from a vade sakana. Interestingly, Rav Shechter In the Nefesh HaRav says that Rav Chaim used to feel that there is a chiyuv to enter a suffix sakana to save somebody from a vade sakana. And not only does Rav Shechter have it, but if you'll look in Chelek Hei of the Tshuvas V'Hanogos of Rav Moshe Sternbach, he has the two stories that Rav Shechter tells from Rav Chaim, kemat word for word, ad kan devarai. So now, the issue in terms of entering suffix sakana, we assume that you shouldn't do that. The Radvaz has different has an analysis along these lines, but he says that sometimes if you do this, you are sometimes it's a chiyuv to do it, sometimes you're a chassid for doing so, and sometimes you're a shulta for doing so.
Chassid
shulta. Well, chassid shulta, right. But sometimes it is a chiyuv, sometimes it's a chassid shulta, and sometimes you're allowed to do it, right. So sometimes it's obligatory, it's usur, or it's a rishos. What does it depend on? Depends on the level of the sakana that's involved. There's one case in the Radvaz about cutting off your arm in order to save somebody else. Can I enter a suffix sakana to save him from a vade sakana? A lot of discussion over there. So now, basically what Dr. Reichman pointed out is it all depends on the level of risk. That's what emerges from the Radvaz's analysis. If there's a very low level of risk to you, so then there's a chiyuv, even though you don't have to enter. We don't pask in like the Yerushalmi that Lagos Maimoni quotes, but that means in a case that's really shaveh b'shaveh, I don't have a chiyuv to enter suffix sakana to save someone from vade sakana. But if my level of sakana is very low, obviously I have a chiyuv. What's the case in point? The rai is the case itself in the Gemara. My friend is drowning. Right? So the Gemara says, well, Samar Adam Reyach, I have to jump in to try to save him. Now, one second. If I'm going to jump in, anyone who took, like, basic life-saving realizes that there's a chance that you'll be pulled under. But the Teretz is, it's a low-level sakana for you, because you know how to swim, you already took the life-saving courses. Right? So that's the basic issue. If it's a low-level sakana, then there's a chiyuv. So, blood donation. There's a real sakana involved, right? No, there's a very low level sakana for me, so obviously, right, lechora, to save somebody from vade sakana, there would be a chiyuv to donate blood. Now, in American law, you can never compel somebody to do this, but al pi halacha, bisam l'sam l'adam reyecha, could be that they would compel you, they would force you to donate blood. Bone marrow. So the poskim used to say that you shouldn't donate bone marrow, because there's no chiyuv to do so, it's a rishos, the poskim said. Because there's a tremendous amount of pain involved. You used to have to drill a hole in your bone to extract the bone marrow. But Bizman Hazeh, they don't drill a hole anymore. Bizman Hazeh, they get the bone marrow out in a much less painful way, in a much less dangerous way to the donor. So therefore, it could be, and Rabbi Bleich assumes, that there's a chiyuv Bizman Hazeh to donate bone marrow. The Tzitz Eliezer similarly had an early tshuva about kidney donation, where he said it's usur, because you're entering the suffix sakana to save somebody from a vadei sakana. In his later tshuva, he said, no, it's not usur, now it's a rishus. What changed? It's not that he changed his mind, it's not the science changed. Right? The level of sakana decreased. Fine. There's actually an interesting sefer that Dr. Reichman mentioned called Kloyos Yoatzos, which is a story about Avram Ravitz, who was just nifter. He was the member of Knesset from Degel HaTorah, and when he went into renal failure, so his sons had a machalikas, which son would donate the kidney to him? So the Bukhara Tain and the Bukhara have Zuchus Kadima. Another said, no, another son said, I have Zuchus Kadima because I was the first one who went for the test to see that I'm a compatible match. So that's a discussion that they have. Who has Zuchus Kadima for these types of donations?
Of course, the Bukhara only had a Taina because afterwards he went to get the test and he was just as compatible.
Right.
Otherwise,
right. If you're not as compatible, of course, it doesn't help. Right. Now, liver transplants, lechora, they never transplant a complete liver. They transplant only parts of the liver.
Right.
So, liver transplants, the poskim assume, is a rishus, or maybe even it's usur, because there has been a lot of serious side effects. I think he said that 11 donors are known to die have died in liver transplants as of 2 years ago. So it's a dangerous procedure. Don't do it. Now the Aruch HaShulchan has a famous line. He says, you know, you should not be too machmir about your level of sakana when it comes to these things. Right? Don't take the sakana so seriously. But you should realize that there are people who are In the teenager, you should try to save them. So that adkan living organ donation. Cadaveric donation, and when we talk about cadavers, we are talking about beating heart cadavers, which basically means brain dead patients. Can you take the organs from them? This is a shaila of what is the definition of death in halacha. The two basic sigyas over here, of course, are the Gemara in Yuma Daf, where is it, Pehei, where the Gemara asks, Mehechan hu bodek, right, do you do the bedika to see by Nachal of Napoles, to see that he's really dead, do you check from the head down to the nose, or do you check all the way into the heart? Well, that's interesting. What's that machlokes? That machlokes l'kara is what is considered life. Is life based on respiration, breathing, that we would check at the nose? Is life based on the heart pumping, which we would check from the heart? Okay, so that is that Gemara. Hutaz Rosho is another sugya. Hutaz Rosho is a mission in the first parak of Ahalos, that after decapitation, so we assume that you are dead. Now, decapitation, though, the Gemara in Chulin, Daf Chaf Aleph, says doesn't have to be physical decapitation. It could be decapitated. It doesn't have to be complete decapitation, but it could be decapitated in the sense that there is no real blood flow. That's what the poskim are assuming. Rav Moshe Feinstein, that Shuv and Chelek Gimel, Simin Kuf Lamed Beis, where he says that brain death is dead, it's really based on that Gemara in Chulin about Eli HaKohen, that he fell back and Nishbara Mefracto, and that's why he's dead. What do you mean he's dead? Everything is attached to everything, it's not Hutaz Rosho. The answer apparently is that if there's really no blood flow to the brainstem is really dead, so in that situation, obviously you can't breathe on your own, then your respiration is going to be done through a machine. And Moshe said, at least according to the people who use this tshuva as Rav Moshe's opinion, Rav Moshe said that that shows that brain death is dead. Now what's interesting though is that in that tshuva itself, Rav Moshe has another line. He says that when there's no blood flow to the brain and near Kavlagamre, his brain begins to disintegrate. That is when the halacha would consider it dead. Now it could be that Rav Shlomo Zalman, this is what Dr. Reichman was saying, that Rav Shlomo Zalman is masking to this. That the definition of death in halacha is brain death, not based on the sugya in Yuma, based on that mission in Ahalos and the sugya in Chulon, is like Hutaz Rosho, but it has to be to such an extent that the brain begins to disintegrate. The problem that Rav Shlomo Zalman said is that you can't do any diagnostic tests for this because the person is a goses and you're not allowed to move him. So Dr. Reichman wrote some articles in Tradition. I think he called his article "Don't Pull the Plug on Brain Death Yet." Where he wanted to argue that maybe it is possible to do the tests, but that's the basic issue from Dr. Reichman's shiur, in terms of just the definition of death, that to allow organ transplants. Halacha lemaisa, this is a machlokas between three of our Rashi Yeshiva here. Right, Rabbi Tendler agrees, of course, to Rav Moshe's opinion, the way he understands it, that brain death is dead based on Hutaz Rosho. Rabbi Schechter has a shita that brain death is suffix death, because the gimel evarim shanasham atzliya behem, and the brain is one of those evarim. It's a suffix. Do you need all of them to be dead? Right? The brain, the kidneys, right? And what's the third one? The liver. The brain, the kidneys, and the liver. And three evarim shanasham atzliya behem. It's a suffix. Do you need all of them, or only one of them? That's Rav Shefa's opinion. The Rabbi Bleich has the opinion that brain death is vaday, not death. So that's the issue here about brain death. Okay, let's just begin very quickly. Rabbi Apfel's share about Hilchos Shabbos in general. It's Hilchos Shabbos from a medical perspective. Rabbi Apfel has the unique perspective that he's a medical doctor. And what he pointed out just at the beginning of the shiur is that, you know, you can learn Hilchos Shabbos from Svarim all the time, but until you confront real cases, it's very different. And he wanted to give over a lot of real cases to illustrate the points. Halacha l'maisa, we know there are four basic categories that we deal with. Cholosha yesh bo sakana, we do whatever we can on Shabbos. No delay. Cholosha ein bo sakana. So cholosha ein bo sakana, we permit amir al nachi. We also permit for cholosha ein bo sakana for a Yisrael to do malacha for him b'shinui. Right? That's a cholosha ein bo sakana. For a cholosha she'ein bo sakana, but there is sakanas aver, then we permit a Yisrael to do malacha without a shinui. And for a meichush, we assume that you can't really violate anything there, right? So drabanan, right, you can't even take medicine. But chola she'ein bo sakana, obviously you can take medicine. Katan is considered a chola she'ein bo sakana. We're not exactly sure what the age of a katan is, but anytime the kid isn't functioning normally as a kid should function, so that would be considered a chola she'ein bo sakana. Yishmir Shas Gilchasi gives a whole list of cases who count as a cholosh yish b'sakana. And these cases come from all over. These cases come from medicine. Someone obviously drinks poison, cholosh yish b'sakana. Right? But there are also cases from the Gemara, which we'll talk about in a few minutes. Like there's a maka begav hayad. Let's say you have a wound on the back of your hand. That's a cholosh yish b'sakana. Now the doctors today would tell you that's not a cholosh yish b'sakana. Even so, the Shmir Shabbos Kofasa counts it as part of the list, because since the Gemara says so unambiguously, so Mimela, it has to be that that's considered a Chola Sheish Basakana. Now, one of the big issues that comes up is when we talk about a Chola Sheish Basakana, let's say right now there's no real Chola, but there's concern that you're going to become a Chola later on. So there are different versions of this. There's Yisrael Salanter's famous psak during a cholera epidemic. So in that case, it's not chola b'faneinu. Chola b'faneinu is what the Note of Yehuda said is required in terms of allowing an autopsy. Right? There should be an issur of nivul hameis. But if it's chola b'faneinu, if you have one guy over here and one guy over here, one person, whatever, just died of swine flu, and you want to see, is there any way that you can, like, find some information on his body to heal the next person who's right here, so then the Nadiv is okay. That's Chola B'Faneinu. The guy is mamish right here. What Rabbi Yisrael Salanter was Meiko on is that if it's Sakana B'Faneinu, we can also be Meiko. Which means that there is a present Sakana. But let's say a guy has a Mishigas. He thinks that maybe if I'm going to go outside and I'm going to breathe stuff, right? So is that considered a chola? Right now there's no sakana, but he's worried that sakana will come. So obviously if there's no sakana b'faneinu, there's no chola b'faneinu, then we're not going to be megal. The question as to when we, the basic issue is that anything that normal people do in due course, that's called shomer p'soim Hashem. Even though there is some sakana involved, how am I allowed to cross the street? Maybe a tractor trailer is going to run me over. The answer is, everyone does it. It's a normal course of action. About that we say, Shomer Psoim Hashem. Now, the Tzitz Eliezer and Reb Shlomo Zalman have an important machlokas in terms of how far-fetched does the concern have to be and still be worried about the halacha. Reb Shlomo Zalman is worried. Let's say I drive on Shabbos in a pekuach nefesh situation, I drive to the hospital. Am I allowed to turn off the engine? Reb Shlomo Zalman says, if you're not going to turn off the engine, now what's going to happen exactly? So apparently the concern is if you don't turn off the engine, there is a chance that the engine, by running for so long, might explode, might blow up. I thought the concern was a little bit different, that like you're going to leave the car going, some guy might get into the car and like kill the whole town. But the concern of the engine blowing up, Reb Shlomo Zalman said, even though it's a small percentage, but there's a real sakana in the small percentage, Reb Shlomo Zalman said, you have to be concerned with it, right? Pekuach nefesh, turn off the car. The Tzitz Eliezer said, don't. The Tzitz Eliezer gives examples. He says, right, there's no heter to turn on the lights in a dark alley because maybe a guy who doesn't walk well is going to walk through the dark alley and fall down and because there's no light and kill himself. That you don't have to worry about. That you don't have to worry about. Why not? Because it's not clear enough. In the case of potential sakana, that's pretty far-fetched. That's a machlokes between Rav Shlomo Zalman and the Tzitzel Eliezer. Dr. Apfel, spend some time on it. I don't have exactly a clear hagdara about what he meant by this. Okay, let's just do one more quick thing.
Rabbi Neuberger says what he said.
Huh?
About the car.
Yeah, I think that's a standard approach. You know, that you're worried that the car, that someone else would take the car and kill other people. Right? Yeah. Leave your day on maras nafsho is the next thing. In other words, if a person, the doctor says the guy's sick, the guy's a choshesh b'sakana, listen to the doctor. Let's say the doctor says, the guy looks okay to me. But the guy tells us, you don't look okay. The guy says, I don't look okay. I don't feel well. I feel like I'm going to die. Right? Leave your day on maras nafsho. So then, we also, it says in Shulchan Aruch, that we are going to be machal Shabbos for him. Now, the case of Leif Yudei Maras Nashville or Machal Shabbos is only in a situation that we look at the guy and he looks a little bit off, but the doctors say don't worry about it. But let's say the guy looks perfectly fine to us. So, B'kahai Gavna, even though Leif Yudei Maras Nashville, we're not going to be Machal Shabbos for him, many poskim say. We'll tell him, you know, sir, you feel sick, why don't you drive yourself to the hospital? Right, you we'll call your bluff. You know, it's Shabbos. You feel sick. Drive yourself to the hospital. Rav Shlomo Zalman says, "Well, no. If it's a type of situation, the guy, even though he looks perfectly healthy, he tells us, 'I feel sick. Take me to the hospital.' If it would be during the week, and we would say, 'Okay, we're gonna take you to the hospital now,' you go and take him, even though he looks perfectly well." Rav Shlomo Zalman disagrees with this approach that we said from the poskim. Now, the Mishnah Berurah also quotes that we only say Leif Yodea Maris Nafsho if the doctor says, okay, you want to take the medicine, take the medicine. But let's say the doctor starts to scream and pull out his head, you take that medicine, you're going to die! Simply don't say Leif Yodea Maris Nafsho. The guy says, I need the medicine. Right? The doctor says, you take the medicine, your mom is going to die. Then, in that situation, we do not say Leif Yodea Maris Nafsho. Now, obviously, in the case of conflict among doctors, we follow the biggest mumcha. We follow the expert. Now, what does expert mean? What Dr. Apfel pointed out very quickly is that expert does not mean who is most renowned. Expert depends on the individual field. Right? Dr. Apfel is a pediatric cardiologist. He has no expertise in OBGYN. Right? So, he's not considered a mumcha. It could be that an ordinary woman would be more of a mumcha than Dr. Apfel on an OBGYN type of shayla. Okay, Adkan. For now, maybe after Meir, if guys have a few minutes, we can finish up at least Dr. Apfel's share.
We had some other point this week to be able to.
Yeah, so how about Tuesday night?
Tuesday night at 9.
Are we meeting after Meir?
If guys want. Do you guys want to meet after Meir, or we could just finish up Tuesday night?
Will there be enough time Tuesday night for all of it?
Yeah.
That economic stuff, yeah.
The economic stuff is not that much. That one I actually prepared already. You could do it, yeah.
We're going to do mezuzah and stuff also?
So mezuzah? I mean, I've said chazor shiur on mezuzah in past years. It hasn't changed.
Maybe
we'll talk about mezuzah. Okay.